This is Church Tech Profiles, episode 4 for the week of August 17th, 2020. Debbie Keough. Well, welcome again to another edition of Church Tech Profiles. I am Van Mechke, and I'm really happy for you guys to be here. I've been wanting to interview Debbie for a while. I've known her for a long time, and you'll kind of understand our history when we get into the interview. Debbie's great. She's awesome. She has a passion for volunteers like I do. And so I'm glad I finally got to interview her. Just a little preface. This interview took place in my truck with the air conditioner running. It was about 105 degrees outside in a parking lot of a Starbucks. So it's a little bit not the norm of what we usually do. But it's a great interview, and I know you'll love it. Hey, before we get started with the interview, though, I don't usually ask stuff like this, but I'm really trying to get this podcast going and get it out to as many people as possible. So if you can share this with your friends, I would certainly appreciate it. Also, we now have a Facebook page, and just go over and check it out. It's just Church Tech Profiles Podcast, and just you can find it and then go ahead and like it. And that'll keep you up to date what's going on Facebook. We also have an Instagram page or an Instagram account. And we also have a Twitter account, which is Church Tech Pro. So anyway, if you need to get a hold of me, obviously just email me at van@thesoundbooth.com. If you want to get past podcasts on the web, you can just go to thesoundbooth.com and they're right there. Or you can just subscribe in your podcast app, which you've probably already done. That's why you're listening to the podcast right now. So here's my interview with Debbie. Enjoy. All right, folks, welcome to another edition of Church Tech Profiles. I'm here with my friend Debbie. Debbie is the production manager of Water of Life Church in Fontana, California. She has the unpleasant duty of working for one of my former tech directors, Marvin. So that's always a joke. That's a joke, folks, for any of you who know Marvin.
It really is.
You know my relationship with him. You actually have my dream job would be to work for Marvin because... because he's just an awesome guy. And so anyway, so welcome, Debbie. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you so much.
We're literally, for those of you who don't know, so in California, there's a weird lockdown because our governor just sends out different rules for different days. And I don't even know what the rule is for today, but we're kind of in a lockdown. So Debbie and I are literally in the parking lot of a Starbucks recording this podcast, just so you know. That's exactly what's happening. So usually I record this stuff on Zoom. So, you know, there you go.
So it might actually be better this time.
It may be. Yeah. Zoom. I have found, you know, Zoom is better audio than Skype.
Yes.
But not a lot.
Yeah. It's minimal difference.
The problem with it, all of these... apps is the way they do their compression really makes everything sound very strident, you know, like everything's right on the verge of distortion no matter how you set your mic pres or anything. Everything's like, you can hear the artifacting of the compression that they use, and that is frustrating. But you know, there's Todd Elliott, the way he records podcasts is he records them on Zoom, but he also has you record your side on QuickTime, and he records his side on QuickTime, and then he combines
them together. I got to do the same thing with Todd interviewed, where he was recording on his side. I actually didn't use QuickTime. I think I used Pro Tools, and so I actually sent him a Pro Tools WAV file, and they just merged these two WAV files from his side and my side and magically come up with Todd's podcast. So.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I'm too lazy to do that, to be honest. I do it, but unless it's really bad, I won't pull it over. So the last, the podcast that aired right before this one's going to air was Todd's book launch that I had him on.
Yeah.
Couple weeks ago, and so I was gonna. I mean, I honestly was gonna do it in Pro Tools or in QuickTime, but yeah, I'm not going to unless the Zoom audio is completely messed up. I probably won't do it. I'm just being honest with everybody. I'm not gonna do it. So I guess I probably should, but I'm not gonna do it. My dream is that someday I will have like a producer person who actually records all this stuff, and I just do the talking head thing. But you actually have to make money off of a podcast to be able to hire a producer person, and that is definitely not happening on this podcast. So
lies the challenge.
Yeah. So I mean, maybe, you know, we'll get some advertisers or something, but you know, I don't know. There aren't any right now, so. But anyway, but that is not why we came here to talk about all that stuff. We came here to talk about Debbie, and I've known Debbie for, how long have I known you? Probably 15 years.
15
probably.
Or more years, yeah.
And so Debbie and I met at Saddleback,
probably,
right?
Probably, yeah.
And so I was the B team coming in to mix the Sunday night services. Because apparently they couldn't get anybody else that would do it, so they asked me to come back and do it. And you were like, what was your role there at the time?
I'm never quite sure. I was never sure what my role really was, because you know, it's like the weather, you just wait a little bit and then you end up doing something else. So
exactly, that's true.
I originally at Saddleback, I came in to be a hybrid and also train people. So that's when Greg Baker hired me. I did audio and lighting and then train volunteers. But as the weather changed, then I'd be like, oh, the only thing I was doing was lighting. Then I was just doing volunteers. And then I was just doing audio. And then I was doing audio and lighting. And so it changed all the time.
Right, yeah. Well, that's what happens at big churches. You just kind of have to jump in and do whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's definitely was my experience at two big churches, that you just do whatever you got to do, and there you go, and you hope that everything works out good.
Yeah.
Well, so for those of you who don't know Debbie, I wanted her to let you kind of get a glimpse in how you got started in tech. What was your road through all this? Where did you get started? How old were you when you got started? Where did you start? Who kind of pushed you into this, you know? Because I don't think anybody goes willingly into doing tech.
But no, you really don't.
But once you're there, then you're just kind of like, hey, this is cool, you know?
Exactly.
So where did you start?
I am first and foremost, I was actually a musician, so I'll just speed through this. In elementary and junior high, I played flute. I got to high school and they needed more drummers because there was a million woodwinds in the marching band. And I actually volunteered to play drums. I mean, I read music. So I just jumped straight into playing drums. Well, then my church found out I played drums. So, playing quads is different than playing a drum set. So I had to learn how to play a drum set. That really is different. But I did. I learned it. And then as time goes, hey, can you help out with sound? And then I end up going noodling around with that. And as all musicians do, they get in a band. They start recording records. Now I'm in my 20s now. I'm speed jumping from elementary to my 20s. And we end up in a recording studio, like all musicians do. Now, this is back in analog days where this is a huge console in the studio, and it usually takes a couple people to mix large albums because there's just so many faders. And the engineer says, hey, I need some help with, like, say, the percussion side of things. Could you manage the drum side of the console? And so I did, and he thought I was great. He's like, hey, you want to come hang out more? So this was really a studio engineer says I kind of had a natural knack for mixing and asked me to come hang out. So I did. He was actually a Christian engineer, Christian studio. So it was a fantastic environment to learn. At the same time, I was still dabbling around in gear, equipment, and stuff like that at the church. So one of my mid-20-ish, when I was in my 20s, a pastor noticed I was getting really good at it and actually helped foster that more. He's like, let's create a recording studio here. And I had a Pro Tools background and all that, so we kind of set up a studio. We started called the first versions of home recording, but we actually did our own albums to some degree. And it was a really small church. But that pastor actually saw that gift in me and helped foster it. Bought gear, all sorts of things, pretty much turned me loose with that. And as time went on, I still kept in a little in the audio industry, but I actually diverged into what was actually becoming income, which was photography. So I went off for about 15 years, made a buttload of money doing photography, but you do still do photography. You're doing video. God's still challenging me and expanding my skill sets. I'm like, okay, what is somebody going to do with video and photography skills? Okay, well, fast forward. Now I'm in my 30s. God knocks on the side of my head and says, hey, you've been doing this all along, and I know you've still been doing audio. You've been learning all this other cool stuff, but I really want you to work for me full time.
I hate it when that happens.
Yeah, and it was a really hard calling, but because I wasn't really working in the house of worship industry, I was kind of doing other things. It was a weird era. It's like, unless you were actually working for a church, nobody really wanted to hire you. So I went to school. Imagine that. And so I actually have a degree in recording arts, and coming literally, like, I'm telling you, God knows how to do this. I get down to the last week of school. I had two churches trying to hire me. So I end up at a couple different churches down in San Diego. And one of them actually jumped right into TD-ing things, which was like, ah! And the other one, I was just kind of coming in for a few hours doing some midweek stuff and all that. So that's kind of how I got started in the church industry. It was kind of weird how God took me in this big side loop of a circle. You know, you talk about the direct path. I want a huge side path. But I think all along he designed me to be working in house of worship as opposed to just secular stuff. Do I do secular stuff? Absolutely. And I think having that diverse cross of doing the secular stuff and the house of worship stuff has actually brought more skill sets back into the house of worship side so we can honor God more. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of us... it's very different, I think, now for the younger folks coming mm-hmm. into doing church tech than it was from the generation before. You know, I mean, I was like that too. I started in high school, and now you were a tech director.
Mm-hmm.
That was really like your first like real gig in the church,
yeah.
right? And then you went to work for Saddleback,
mm-hmm.
and then somehow. You found your way out into the Inland Empire here, into the desert, coming from San Diego to Orange County, and now out here in the desert.
Yep, I'm in the desert. By the way, we're in a car right now, guys, because it's 105 degrees outside.
Yeah, yeah, and it's going to be 107 tomorrow.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic. But what's really funny is, those of us who grew up out here, I don't consider this the desert. Palm Springs
is the desert.
We're like right before the desert uh-huh. happens, you know? But anybody that's grew up in San Diego, Orange County, Ventura, anything like that, once they get to out where we are right now, they think they're in the desert. So it's just really funny. And for those of you who are all over the nation and the world, you have, just look on a map. Mm-hmm. Just look on a map. So, you know, the Southern California is a very diverse landscape
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Where you have mountains where there's snow. And within 100 miles, you have the ocean.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's just a weird, it's a cool place to live, but it also gets very hot and everything like that. So anyway, so right now you are the production manager.
Mm-hmm.
What does that entail for you? What's kind of the setup of Water of Life? What's your like staff structure and all that good stuff Tell me what that is, and then tell me how much it's changed since you became part of the staff.
Okay, so the coming on board, I was hired as production manager. Now, typically, that production manager role also carried all the systems engineer roles and duties, but we kind of had identified there was another person on staff that we think really could do that well and better and allow me to focus on things better as well. So we kind of strategically, even though it's still in my job description, shifted a lot of responsibilities onto another guy, and that trust of empowering him to do that has paid off immensely. Like, he has just killed it.
Right.
So I would almost say the first thing I could do is actually empower somebody by not doing all of my job. But the folk that we kind of refocus what the production manager would do, in that I'm still what a typical production manager should be, which is hands-on with the actual service and programming of the event. But I'm trying to lead a different process for volunteers to bring on more people, so changing structures and workflows. So for lighting, for instance, so in order to empower our systems engineer, we actually had to pull him off of lighting. It wasn't that he did a bad job. We thought he'd be an even better systems engineer.
Right.
And at the same time, we restructured lighting so that it could be 100% volunteer run, where before it was a 100% staff run with an occasional volunteer.
Right.
So there.
Well, and explain how. So, explain like kind of how Water of Life is set up, because just so you guys know, the Water of Life has like a 3,000 seat auditorium.
Yes.
And then has other venues, so mm-hmm. it's like a there's like a lot of stuff going on. Like
it's a mega church.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we in the Inland Empire, which is out here about 60 miles east of L.A., we call Water of Life the biggest church no one's ever heard of,
mm-hmm.
because it's almost never on anybody's radar for the most part. But it's this huge church. It's a giant church that tons of people go to, and it's just really funny because Water of Life has just been there trucking along, doing its own thing.
Uh-huh.
Pastor Dan, I mean, I literally sold Pastor Dan a sound system when he was in elementary school, like 20 some years ago.
Are you kidding me? I had no idea. That's
yeah,
so cool.
Yeah. Cause he came from, a church that I did a lot of stuff with in Upland. He was the youth pastor.
Mm-hmm.
And when he left there, then he started Water of Life in like a elementary school, like cafetorium or mm-hmm. whatever. And yeah, I sold him a bunch of Audio Technica microphones. No one cares about this on the podcast, by the way, but we're just going to talk about it anyway. I sold him a bunch of Audio Technica microphones, two JBL double 12 and a horn MR series speakers, an amp, and I think a Soundcraft Spirit rack mounted mixer. I'm thinking. I literally think that was the sounds, and maybe a couple of MR wedges.
Uh-huh.
You know, yeah, literally. And I'm sure those have been gifted to ministries long time ago, if they even still, MR series probably blew the horns out in 2 years and they don't work anymore. But, you know, but no, that's literally, that is like, that's how long I've known Pastor
Dan. That's great.
And just to see what he's done and his team and you guys have done at Water of Life over the past 25 mm-hmm. you know, years, has been real, very, very cool. And it's kind of cool that I got to sell him stuff all those years ago, and then you guys, my good friends, are working there
yeah.
and doing that. So that's pretty cool. Anyway, that's just a side.
Bonus content.
Yeah, yeah. I was working for an integration company out here in the Inland Empire before I went to work for Saddleback, and that's the company that sold him all the gear. So
a little bonus side history
yeah,
there.
Side history. I may cut it out. I may cut this out of the podcast. I don't know. Whatever. So how is your week and your staff's week, and how do you, and we're going to talk about one of the things. I would give you a little preview here. One of the reasons I wanted to have Debbie on is because she shares my passion about volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of people love to talk about volunteers, but I think Debbie and I really love to talk about volunteers the most, and it's usually what we end up talking about
yeah.
when we're together for a while. So anybody who knows me and knows Debbie knows that we both are very volunteer driven. That is like our biggest passion in this. And so we're going to talk about that a little bit later. But what is your, like, what's the weekly responsibilities and kind of how everything is set up, what you have to do? Because I know that Water of Life has a school, And how, by the way, how is the beer bug affecting, like, you know, the school at the church and all the different stuff? What?
Well, let's back up. What we normally would do, this is pre-pandemic, we were pretty much a 7-day a week mega church. And so our teams were split up between student ministries, memorials, weekend services. Now it's whatever we're allowed to do.
Right.
So a huge chunk of the focus has all been revolving around what is now just trying to make weekend service happen. Because currently what we are allowed to do is have outdoor gatherings.
Right.
So we are constantly trying to refine our process to basically go on tour every Saturday. So we now have an outside stage. All of our gear has either already been transitioned to road cases or is in the process of being transitioned to road cases, so things can roll outside and roll back inside. We're trying to speed up our processes because ministry never stops, and other ministries have noticed we now have an outdoor stage. So we're trying to ramp up and speed up our processes for that outside setup and also scale it. So do we need a full setup with cameras versus do we just need a simple memorial in which we can throw an X32 and two speakers and a stick outside? So almost all of our teams right now are focused on how to make this space effectively work. We have other people that are concentrating on just streaming content and how to get our content online better and faster, more effectively. We're exploring all sorts of different and looking at stats between YouTube, Facebook, live stream. Do we try something else? You know, we're just always constantly trying to evaluate what right now for our needs is a better process. So
churches have gotten a huge wake up call. It's because my friend Jeff says, the analytics don't lie. If you suck, the analytics tell you that you're not reaching the people that you want to reach.
Yeah. So here's a really cool thing, though. And you know, this is going to throw the volunteers and training, although we don't have a ton of volunteers in some of the midweek processes. But it's a similar process that we have already used for, say, if we had our regular midweek student ministry services going on. We've all talked about it, MXU, so here's a big plug for MXU, about the virtual sound checks and training, building up your skill sets. So what we're doing right now is, because it's 105 degrees, actually it's supposed to be 107 on Saturday for services, we're doing midweek rehearsals. And so we multi-track everything, and we're coming in the day later, and actually I'm meeting my technical director today because he wants to take a stab at broadcast mixing this weekend, and we're going to sit down and evaluate, you know, what is working, what is not working. I've got a really young girl who actually was a volunteer, and she kind of worked her way into monitors. Well, she gets to mix front of house outside for the first time.
That's awesome.
But she has been slowly just killing it, doing virtual sound checks and grinding her time in. But we are able to take all of this and kind of think about it and spin it around and create better workflows, faster workflows. So all we have to do is plug in our PA out there, play the virtual sound check real quick to make sure everything sounds good. The band comes up, does their quick sound check, and we're off and running for service. So we have like minimal time outside in this 100 degree heat. But it's been just amazing looking at how can we utilize our current technologies to make us more effective outside without baking in the sun for 10 hours.
Right.
At the same time, people are building their skill sets. So we've got one guy who's never mixed broadcast before like this, and a girl who's never mixed front of house outside. Oh, she's also doing monitors from that same console. But everybody's getting to explore some really cool processes and grow their skill sets at the same time. So that's what's currently happening, and that's not what normally would happen at Water of Life. But I really love that we're able to build into our teams more. And that is Water of Life's DNA, is we constantly want to improve our skill sets and utilize the people that we have and grow them in new areas.
Yeah, well, that's, and I think, you know, that's one of the reasons. So I don't know how long ago it was, because I have no concept of time anymore. now that this is now that we've once coronavirus hit, time just kind of went out the way. It actually kind of, I feel like it became irrelevant, like, you know, on a big scale. As I remember when before you got hired, Marvin had, I was having lunch with him, and he was talking about hiring somebody for the production manager role, and of course your name came up, and one of the things that I was most excited about having you do it is was your passion for volunteers. Mm-hmm. and because Marvin has a huge passion for volunteers too, because he came from the culture that we had at the church that Marvin and I were at, which was a huge volunteer culture because we didn't have a choice. It was like he and I were the only staff tech guys. So yeah. You know, so we had a giant volunteer, and Marvin is just a lover of people and loves that whole thing. So bringing you on, it's like you guys are like the dynamic duo, as far as I'm concerned, for just having a great like team, because you guys are very concerned. Yeah, the technology has to be good, has to work, all that stuff. Of course, you know, you can't suck at your job. It's got to be good. But you guys care far more about the people than you do about.
But I appreciate his role because he gets to deal with leadership,
right?
Where I just get to deal with people.
And he is very good at dealing with leadership. He's very, very good at that. So, so what in all of this? How are you finding people to fill these positions? Is it just you said that the culture of the church is very much a people-driven culture of a church, and people. You know, you can say that and people go, well, duh, it's church and it's about people. But both of us talk to a lot of churches where the culture is not about the people, weirdly enough. But so how are you finding, like you said, you've got you're training up this young lady who's, you know, doing that. Where are you finding these people and how are you cultivating the culture to find people to do these things?
It's twofold. I find some of my most effective volunteers are because of one-on-one relationships. I've had a conversation with somebody or invited somebody over and followed up with them. I think relations are huge, and people are not necessarily interested in giving their time to something in which they don't feel relationally they're going to get back.
Yeah.
People, there's too much to do in this world right now. Why show up and like not even get a thank you? But we do get stray inquiries, but we have to hard follow up with those people. So we have changed a lot of processes in our follow-up, so it's faster. Now, right now, it is really hard. We actually are still getting a few, you know, out of the blue inquiries. So we're trying to follow up with those people really, really fast. And we have some processes to train people, which are hands off. So if we get somebody who's got questions on audio, well, I can remote into that console and actually with my virtual mouse show people what needs to be done. So we've got some really good processes that are hands off right now, so we can do the whole social distancing thing. But I find your really long-term volunteers are people that you have personally invested time into, and it's a lot of work. And so I'm going to use this young lady as an example. I knew her before we even brought her to Waterless. She just wanted to have a relationship with another female tech.
Right.
And it didn't matter if she was ever going to push a fader at Water of Life. I just met with her one-on-one, and then at some point she was searching for a new place to fit in. And I'm like, why don't you come here? Well, she fit in so well, we hired her.
Yeah.
So she's now one of our part-time employees, and but that's part of the relationships, and we fostered a seed that she now wants to, this is her career. Like she says that God has called me to do this, and these people has invested their time into this. She might have missed God's calling if people weren't stopping to have conversations with her.
Right. Yeah, that's, well, as we say, folks, and we said on this podcast and many other podcasts, it all comes down to relationships. That's what
always.
It's all about. It's all about relationships. I tell tech people all the time, I said, here's the thing. If you work for a church, whether you're paid or not, if you work for a church in tech, Jesus was in the people business.
Mm-hmm.
If you work for a church, you're in the people business. And that's just all there is to it. And I think that's the biggest thing we we talk about this a lot, is that tech people tend to be introverts. You know, we joke, you know, people always joke that I'm in the 3% of tech people that are extroverts.
You are.
But yeah, but you can, that doesn't mean, even though you're an introvert, it does not mean you cannot be relational with people.
Exactly.
It does not mean you have to hide in your closet with one light on, LED on, mixing by yourself. It doesn't mean that. That's not the way it should be. We are better together. I think that this whole pandemic, I hate that word. There's going to be about 10 words or phrases that I want stricken from the English language after this is all over. And pandemic's one of them. Pandemic, pandemic, new normal. I hate new normal. Literally, like, I never want to say those words again. New normal. This is awful.
I can't wait to listen to this a couple years from now.
Oh, it's going to be awesome. Yeah. By the way, I just read I read an article that literally was talking about something, and every single paragraph had the entire name for COVID-19 in it. They would say the blah, 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 because of, and then the entire coronavirus COVID-19 pandemic in every, like, literally, like, the guy had copied and just
pasted it.
It was like 7 paragraphs, and every one of them had, I'm like, is there anyone reading this article right now that does not have any idea what's happening? And if you, it was, anyway, rabbit trail.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. I think that this whole thing has shown us, whether you're an introvert or an extrovert, how much relationships matter. When we first started this thing, CCI has, we have, I don't know, 20 people on our integration team. Mm-hmm. And we do a Zoom, Teams, Microsoft Teams call every morning at 8 o'clock. And it was really funny because one of the most introverted guys on our team, the very first week, he said, "Hey guys, I know a lot of people aren't doing this, but could y'all turn your cameras on? Cause I really need to see all your faces." And I was like, "Wait a minute, you're the," and I didn't say this, but I was just like, "Oh, okay. So see, even the introverts, they need that connection, you know, with people." And I'll tell you what, these meetings have been some of the best. Like, people look forward to that meeting every morning just to be able to see the entire team, because we're all spread out all over the place now, and nobody's, you know, there's like 5 people in the office, you know, and for the most part. And so it's just really interesting. So I love what you're saying. I think that's great. How, let's go past this time we're in right now.
Time warp ahead.
Yeah, time warp ahead to when everything is whatever it ends up being. Where do you see, just, I mean, and of course this is going to change, this will change tomorrow, but where would you like to see, what's you and Marvin's vision for back in the, you know, you're back in the building, things are the way you want, the way we like running things. What is your vision for your expansion of volunteers and your teams and kind of how you run services and all that kind of stuff?
I think what the original intention was is more diversity in the team. What had happened is a lot of people were pigeonholed into, this person does this, and that's all they do. And volunteers were the same way. So we had started opening up the door to cross-training. We had even started training programs and manuals, which we really didn't even get on the ground yet because of what's recently happened. But we have, at least intentionally within our own team, because we can right now, is we got audio guys that are learning how to shade. We have other guys running cameras, vice versa. We've got RTD going to mix broadcast for the first time this weekend. So we're all kind of shifting around, trying some new things. We've got other audio guys that are learning lighting for the first time. And I know a lot of you lighting people are like, "Oh, you're going to let the audio guys play with our stuff?" Yeah, we're going to do that. And our volunteers are actually being empowered to train other people more, where it didn't happen, but very rarely prior to that. So I'm taking people that say already know that lighting console, they're responsible for training the next person. Like, hey, you go hang out together, you two, and you're going to train this person. And we actually just did that because we did a filming of our children's, we called it Summer Spectacular, other people call it VBS. And one of our audio guys who had just learned lighting, basic lighting, trained another camera volunteer on lighting, and she sat there for the filming of our whole Summer Spectacular program that was broadcast live online, never made any mistakes on lighting. Cool. And she was so new at it, but we're intentionally taking people and cross-training them into new areas where we can already. We would just love to see it balloon out, in which now it's just not, we're pigeonholed into only one role, one trained aspect, that we have a more diverse technical community, and we've got people now empowered to train other people. I don't want to be the only one training. What I want to be the one is empowering people to not only acquire the training skill, but also use the training skill.
Right. And the only way that happens is that you have to just be willing to, you know, you have to be willing to let mistakes happen.
Exactly.
And you have to be able to, my one word of advice on that, though, and I think you've heard all of us say this before, is if you're going to have a volunteer culture, you have to get your leadership on board with the fact that mm-hmm. everything's not going to be perfect. And that's okay.
Yeah.
And it's all right, because the end goal is great. It's worth it. You've helped so many smaller churches. I'm sure you get calls all the time. Most of us do who've been doing this a long time. What would you say, and like every church now has been thrust into being a video venue.
Yes.
Like every church in the world, mm-hmm. not just America, the
everyone.
World. What would you say to someone who's just a volunteer, you know, technical person at a church that's just literally been thrust into a ton of stuff that's way over their head? What would you say to them about, you know, reaching out, getting help, all that kind of stuff?
Dude, you just like pick the first couple words I was going to say. You got to network, because even I don't know everything, and I network with other engineers and techs out there just to pick their brain on questions. I've got people from mega churches asking me questions, and I actually respond, hey, I don't know, and when you find out, I would love to hear your insight as well. So I would just say there's a lot of great Facebook forums out there, even though it can be a kind of a catch-all as to who responds to you. But you might find a few individuals that you'll identify as maybe some people you can start a dialogue with. And sometimes that's all it takes, is just a few people to network with.
That doesn't mean all Facebook forums are good forums, by the way.
No. remember, I did say it can be a catch-all, so use with caution.
Yeah.
But try to create a few relations in which you can find a trusted friend. And even if it's just a local friend, that local friend probably has another friend. And then that friend has another friend. So I've got some people who are like, hey, I want to learn this software. And I'm like, actually, I'm not in a position to come over and train you, but here is another person. So people are asking me, who do I know? And networking is everything. And at the same time, we go back to that phrase, relationships is everything. So try to connect with people you already, if you don't know anybody, ask a musician, because I'm pretty sure a musician knows an engineer or a tech somewhere. And even if it's not the person you want to know, just create a network of friends and keep that relationship going. Don't be afraid to ask questions. I always tell students that I teach, there are no dumb questions. You're dumb for not asking. And that is probably the dumbest thing you could do, is be afraid to ask something.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to say you are dumb, but you just gotta be, you gotta get it out there. And, you know, in the end, I always think of we're here to serve God and get God's message out. And if we're holding ourselves back because we're afraid to ask a question, we may not get God's word out as well as we could. And right. I'm not saying we're failing in that, but I think we should just do our best to ask the questions and see where we can improve.
I think humility is a big factor in that. I think there are a lot of technical people. I think the two things that I hear pastors, because in the job I do now, I talk to a lot of pastors. Yeah. And so the two things I hear about tech people when their pastors are frustrated with them is they don't feel like they're humble and they feel like they're passive aggressive. So if we can work on those two things, folks. the first one, I think, is exactly what you said. It's not that they're proud. Well, they are proud, but they're also scared to let people know, oh, I can't let anybody know I don't know how to do this. Mm-hmm. Well, they'll either kick me out of the position or they'll go, what? She doesn't know. They don't know. And I'm like, That's dumb. No one can know everything.
I really think pastors will appreciate more that you say, hey, I don't know, let me research this.
Absolutely.
And at the same time, when I make mistakes, it's like, I didn't get that right. I own that. So I try to own my mistakes. At the same time, I'm pretty honest in saying, yeah, I don't know, let me take a look at it. Or, hey, I don't know, but I know somebody who knows, so let me connect with somebody. Mm-hmm. I think pastors just mostly care that you're listening to them. At the same time, you're willing to explore whatever option they're asking of you, or at least research it.
Right. And you got to remember, too, that one of the reasons you're in the position you are is a little bit of it, let's face it, folks. A lot of times you're the leper with the most fingers. You're the only person that knows. We always joke about small churches starting up. It's like they go around the room with the eight people that are at the startup church, and the guy works for Verizon, so he's the tech guy because that's the closest thing to tech there is. Right? I'm like, well, that guy knows about as much. I mean, everybody has a phone. So, but the truth of the matter is, most of the time you're in that position because the pastor feels like you know something. He doesn't think you know everything, and he doesn't know, or she doesn't know, and that's why they're asking you. Mm-hmm. So, it's like I tell everybody that I can. I mean, it's like you can't know everything, mm-hmm. but always, my dad always used to say, have a Rolodex full of people smarter than you who are willing to take your phone call. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the bottom line, and of course there's young people on listening to this going, what's a Rolodex? Anyway, look it up. Wikipedia. So it's all good. Google it. But the bottom line is what you're just saying, is networking super important. Mm-hmm. Honestly, the only reason that I've stayed employed my entire life is because I'm a good networker.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the bottom line. I mean, you've known me a long time. I'm a good networker. I network with everybody. I am unafraid to do that. It is hard when you first start.
It is.
And I think that people who look at extroverts and they go, oh, well, it's easy. You talk to everybody. No, I'm intimidated. The first time I've talked to a lot of people, everybody's heard my story about Andrew Stone. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh man, I'm never going to be able to talk to that guy. But I did it anyway.
He
and I became really close friends. So I would have missed that opportunity to have a great friendship if I hadn't just reached out and said, I'm going to do this anyway. It doesn't matter. And I can say that about tons and tons and tons of people. It doesn't matter if you're an introvert or an extrovert. You need to reach out. And most people in our industry, you can disagree with me or not, most people that I know in our industry, especially at big churches, love to help smaller churches. They will almost always answer questions.
And to go further with that, I would say if you have somebody like, and I'll use the Andrew Stone as an example, and you've got, say you were a tech director, I would actually introduce some of your people and mm-hmm. pull Andrew aside. It's like, hey, Andrew, I want to introduce you to some other people, because that opens the door. Say your younger volunteers or staffers are those introverts who might have not walked up to Andrew Stone. Right. As a leader, do what you can to, it's not really forcing the connection, but at least opening the door to the connection.
Right.
So if you have somebody that you think could be a great resource for your younger tech folk or even co-staffers, just introduce them. So I'm good friends with Robert Scoville. A lot of times when I'm at these seminars, I'll bring some of my friends or coworkers and say, hey, Robert, just want to introduce you to that. And then from there, it is up to them to finish the connection.
Right.
But I think it's really important as leaders that we do follow up and help some of those doors if possible.
Right. And guys like Robert, I don't get to see him very much, but I get to see him at conferences every once in a while. And I met him because, well, I met him years ago through he's the one that convinced me to buy a Paragon when we were at Mariners. That's how long ago I've known him. And I don't know him real well. I mean, I know him in just, you know, spurts. You know him way better. But I will tell you, he has always been super gracious to me, always answered questions, always had a great conversation, always just been like, whatever. And, you know, most people, whether you're Tom Petty, sound engineer, and Def Leppard and all those bands like he is, or you're at a big mega church like an Andrew Stone or somebody like that, I mean, honestly, most people that do this, now, you need to be respectful. You need to not bug. If you can Google it, please do it first. As Mike Sessler always says, there's this thing called Google.
Google.
Please do not text me or email me something that you could Google.
Google has a lot of answers.
Yeah. Not always right, but at least there's a good place to start.
Exactly.
But if you really want to know something specifically about something they're doing, then, you know, reach out. Because it's just, you know, it's totally worth it. And you're making a good connection. You know, it's because it's so important. I'll tell you the number one thing right now that I'm hearing from people here, at least even here in Southern California, is, man, when are you going to do another roundtable? When are you going to do another tech lunch? When are you? And folks, if you're listening and you're in Southern California, as soon as this is over,
we would love to.
We are going to do it. Debbie and I have talked about it. Duke and I have talked about it. We have talked about it. It has been talked about.
Some of us actually tried this whole March blow up. We actually tried creating some of that, and then everything kind of blew up here in SoCal.
Which it did everywhere else too. But it is something that is important and that we want to do. And here's the bottom line. When this is all over, you're listening to this in 2 years, you just stumbled upon it, and you're like, really? Is that what it was like back when COVID happened? Look, if you're a tech at a church and you're somewhere where there's not a, you don't feel like there's a presence, start something. Like call other churches your size, find people that either have a tech director or even a volunteer production leader or whatever, and say, hey, we're doing this. We're going to have a lunch. We're going to go over here. We're going to do this thing. Whatever, you know. And I will tell you this, a lot of integrators and companies, you know, that like AV companies that build product, if you can talk to them at shows and stuff like that, a lot of them will be willing to go, look, I'll buy, I'd love to buy the lunch for everybody. Mm-hmm. I'd love to just pay for lunch. And, I mean, we do that. We'll pay. Look, let's get together. It's not an advertisement, but we love this community and we'll get everybody together. We'll chip in for lunch. And then I'll go to the event and just go, hey, I'm here. Blah, blah, blah. Have a great lunch. Party on. And everybody gets to talk and everybody gets to network. If you think you can't do it, but even if you have four or five people and they all pay for their own lunch, it's totally cool. It's great, you know?
Yeah, but you might be surprised. People like to eat.
Yeah.
And it's actually a really great door for introverts to get together. And
Everybody likes to eat.
Yeah.
So especially if you're Christian, Christians love to eat. Technical people love to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And technical people love to hang out with technical people. Mm-hmm. Even if they're complete introverts, they will get in a crowd of other tech people.
Mm-hmm. Always.
So the one other people that nerds know are other nerds. So they love to be around people like them, where they feel, because it's the same way, like in the gaming community or whatever, you know, they wouldn't ever talk to anybody else, but they will talk to people who have the same passion that they do. So yeah, connecting is for sure like one of the biggest things. So, well, before I let you go, what's your parting shots, words of advice to those out there who are listening to this, whatever. So
I think we really settled in a theme of, and I know you talk about it a lot, relationships. And we talked a lot about volunteer developments. I would really put out there to everybody, don't be afraid to take a risk. You never know what door God's going to open. I mean, God's opened some crazy doors for me, and I know where I'm right now is exactly where He wants me to be. And I feel so fulfilled investing into others. Like, I am actually not on a piece of gear for this coming weekend.
Awesome.
And I love that I have been able to empower other people to do it. I know I've got 2 people on audio this weekend, and that's a risk, and they've never done either role. And we're going to do our whole weekend service like that. And I couldn't be more thrilled, because I think sometimes those risks are worth it, manageable risks, yet those risks are worth it. So don't be afraid to create those relationships. Don't be afraid to take risks in development. And more importantly, don't be afraid to just reach out and see what God's going to do with some things.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, yeah, I couldn't say it better myself. It's all, you've heard it a billion times. We sound like a broken record, all of us, but it's all about relationships. That's what it's about.
Yeah.
It's about people are the most important thing. At the end of the day, Jesus didn't die for gear. Mm-hmm. He died for people. And so that's what we're here for. That's what we're here to do. And I think you said it best. Way at the beginning of this, you said something that I wanted to come back around to, but I'll just say it real quick, is people want to feel part of something bigger than themselves. You said something akin to that. And that's why people volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
They don't volunteer to, they may say they're in tech, they're volunteering because they like to push faders, you know, or, you know, whatever. But ultimately, they may volunteer because of that. They stay because of family. Because it's a family thing. So, well, Debbie, thank you very much. If people want to reach you, what's the best way for people to reach out to you?
I am on social media, both Facebook and Instagram. I am on Twitter, but I am more of a lurker on Twitter. So it is Debbie Keough, DebbieKeough on both Facebook and Instagram.
Well, thank you so much. We've been talking about doing this for a long time. So yeah. I'm glad we actually got to do it. If you want to reach out to Debbie, Twitter is, I don't know. Twitter helped us get started in all of this.
I'm a total lurker though.
But Twitter has now become, Twitter can be awesome and it can also be big dumpster fire.
Go hit up my Instagram, folks, because it's mostly about my hobbies. So you'll see biking and trail running and hiking.
Yeah, and then you can DM her
and
you can get your questions answered. And I will tell you this, you've probably already learned this by listening to Debbie, but she really does have a passion to help other tech folks and to help all of you be better. That's like the most important thing. I think it's one of the reasons you and I get along so good, because we have that affinity for that. So. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week with another, I think it'll be next week. I was going to do these every other week, but now I actually have so many guests now that I'm going to do it every week. So it's going to be cool. I mean, we've got a lot of great, we got Dan Olson coming up. We've got Justin Firesheets. I don't really want to interview Justin Firesheets, but he guilted me into it. That's a joke. you guys that know Justin. So we've got a lot of cool people coming up. I think you're really going to enjoy it. So thank you, Debbie, one more time.
Yep.
I really appreciate it. And, check out Water of Life Services. If you want to look at services that are being done really well online. So what's where can they go see the services online?
Currently, so wateroflifecc.org, and we are airing live outdoors on a outdoor stage, 6 p.m. on Saturdays, and then it is rebroadcast at 9:30 and 11:30 Sunday, and then from there out, it's on demand.
So if you think that you can't pull off an outdoor service, go watch their service. And you can see a good outdoor service done. Because I haven't watched the services yet, but I always see all you and Marvin's Instagram posts, you know, of the, you know, having church and stuff like that. And I'm like, well, God bless you guys for doing that. Because that is kind of crazy. But anyway, so, all right, folks. Well, thanks a lot. Hey, one thing I would ask, we're thinking about, and by we, I mean me, because I'm the only one doing this, about putting the podcast also on a YouTube channel, but it'll be audio only. And I do see a lot of people do that, but I'm wondering, do people really listen? I know that, like, young people listen to music on YouTube. They don't, like, they'll listen to all their music on YouTube. They just do a playlist, and they don't really even watch it. They just listen. So do people really listen to podcasts audio only on YouTube? Is it worth doing? So hit me up at van@thesoundbooth.com and let me know if that's something that you think that I should do. I'm a YouTube addict, but I don't really listen to podcasts on YouTube, unless they're video podcasts. And so the other thing is, please go to our Instagram, which is Church Tech Profiles, and like that. Go, if you're on Twitter, we are Church Tech Pro. We have a Facebook group, a Facebook page, so you can go there and interact there. And coming up, we are going to be doing some roundtables. I'm sure I can twist your arm and be part of that.
Potentially, Debbie? Yes.
And we're going to do some roundtables, kind of akin to a Church Tech Weekly or a This Week in Tech by Leah Laporte or something like that. Because a lot of people have been asking me, hey, when are you just going to get a bunch of people together and just talk about Church Tech for 2 hours? So we are going to do that every once in a while. I kind of have that in the works, and we may actually do that on a Zoom call and actually do it on a Facebook Live when we're doing it, so that people can kind of interact and ask questions.
Could be fun. Like,
could be a disaster, because sometimes those are, but it could be fun. Yeah. So anyway, so thank you guys for listening. Appreciate it. Tell a friend about this podcast, and we're really trying to get the word out there. And so have a great day. We'll talk to you later.